Ladies and gentlemen, it's time for another episode of Talking Sports from the Couve. And we're going to kick it to your host, the hero of Vancouver, Ryan Black.
Thank you guys so much, Ryan Black, stepping in, taking over the seat here on Talking Sports in the Couve with my co-host, Rip Rex Rip. Thank you so much, man. This is something me and you have dreamed about doing for a long, long time. We've been friends since high school. We've done multiple podcasts together, had a YouTube show together, have always had a bond and a passion for talking sports, and that is what Vancouver needs to hear, and that is what we're going to bring to them here on this show. Thank you for stepping in and being my sidekick as we take this journey.
Of course. I think it's always been something we've always wanted to do. And I've popped in and out of Talking Sports before. So a few listeners that have been listening for a while know me. Really excited for the future and then the new episodes and getting your chance to take over as host.
Yeah, no, it's going to be exciting. We're definitely going to be talking a lot of basketball here in the last two segments of the show. We've got a lot of stuff to cover on the Game 7 that happened last night, the NBA Finals starting on Wednesday, getting our thoughts and predictions, and then we've got a lot of Blazers basketball to talk and how pivotal of an offseason this will be in the city of Portland for the Blazers. But I want to start talking a little bit about the NFL and about my team, the Steelers, in specific, because, you know, Aaron Rodgers is coming back, and there's been a lot of hate around Rodgers coming back to this team after everybody kind of said that's what should happen.
Yeah, I really wanted to come in and ask you about that because end of the season, you had the bandwagon fans, I guess, the guys that jumped on and were like, oh man, it's a heck of a team. Then you get the new coach and they're like, oh man, you get the coach that's perfect for Rodgers. You guys just re-sign Rodgers and you guys are okay. Then you get that length of time where they're like, when are you guys going to re-sign Rodgers? You need to re-sign Rodgers. Then you do it and now everybody's like, I don't know. Are you guys sure you wanted to do that? He seems old. I wanted to ask you, is that because of, you know, drafting Aller, or are people seeing from Howard things that they wanted to see in the beginning? Why all the hate?
I truly think people are forgetting that we don't just have a new head coach, but we have a whole new coaching staff brought in here in Pittsburgh this year. And people just assume like it's the same thing going to be happening year after year, like under Tomlin. And people don't understand that this is not the Mike Tomlin show anymore. This is not copy and paste. Everything that I've seen and heard out of OTAs have just proven to me that the Steelers are finally heading in a direction of change. And after such a long time, 20 plus years of having the same head coach, you know, it's not a bad thing to change it up. And especially when you look at the fact that with the lineage of our head coaches and how long they tend to last, the Steelers have not had an offensive-minded head coach since the 1950s. The Steelers last year, Aaron Rodgers was a top 15 quarterback in the NFL, had a better touchdown-to-interception ratio than Patrick Mahomes and Lamar Jackson last year. Was out here putting up top 15 numbers as a quarterback with one of the worst receiving corps ever. It was DK, and then it was a bunch of washed up guys. And then whenever Calvin Austin wanted to show up, we would have one and a half receivers on the field. But it was not the receiving corps that we're walking into this year. You got DK, Michael Pittman, and the new guy from Alabama, Jeremy Bernard, who's been putting on a heck of a performance in OTAs so far. So having offensive weapons there, we lost Kenneth Gainwell, but we replaced him with Rico Dowdle. Replacing him with Rico Dowdle is an absolute one-for-one like-like replacement, and it makes a lot of sense. He's an upgrade. Dowdle's been a 1,000-yard rusher the last three seasons. He worked with McCarthy in Dallas, so he has experience in a Mike McCarthy system. So the offensive weapons are there for this team. The defense, I've said it for years, is a lot of great players, but Mike Tomlin liked his scheme and refused to change things up. And Patrick Graham, our new defensive coordinator, one of the things he's most praised on around the league is adapting his scheme in defense to the players that he has surrounding him. And if you look at what he did with a not the best defense in Oakland, but he built that unit into, you know, a top 15 defense in the league over the past 2 years, with only having, you know, really one or two standout players on that defense. So I really like what I've seen him be able to do. So to him come into a team that has a lot of studs, I think he's going to take a big step forward and show why we've trusted him to come in and be the defensive coordinator. So there's so many things that point to the change of the guard, and that's what makes me so excited.
Well, I mean, I think the big thing is making sure the offensive line is locked in and making sure that he's not running around and he's not scrambling around, because the big thing with Aaron Rodgers is you see him make the mistakes when he was in Green Bay, when he was in only for a little bit in New York, but you know, even with you guys, if he's having to run around and he's having to scramble around, there's a big chance that he's going to throw an interception.
Yeah.
There's a big chance he's going to try to make some kind of big gamble, mm-hmm. which he used to get away with when he was younger.
Which
that,
I think
that hasn't led to good things.
I think he can get away with it again because, like I said, he has the receiving core this year. Last year, he had nobody to throw the football to. He had 1.5 guys to throw the football to, and he only threw 7 interceptions last year. 23 touchdowns, I believe, to 7 interceptions for Rodgers last year. So it's not like he was out there throwing the ball all over the field. He only got sacked. It was 23 to 26 times last season. So the O-line wasn't great, but it wasn't atrocious. It wasn't like he was, you know, getting sacked 35, 40 times last season.
Right, right, right. And you know, honestly, yes, being sacked is a big number and is a big thing that contributes to that measurement. But it's also, you know, how rushed are they being? Because there's a lot of times where the line may have lost to a rush, and that rush gets to the quarterback but doesn't sack them. Maybe rushes them to throw the ball or throws away, or something happens to where it doesn't count as a sack, but it also didn't count as positive yards.
No, definitely. And I mean, we talk about the change of the guard. Mike Tomlin's favorite thing was, let's draft an offensive lineman and change him from a guard to a tackle, or move him from the right side to the left side. It was very rare that you would draft an offensive lineman and Mike Tomlin would play them in their natural position. And it drove Steelers fans crazy. So first day of OTAs, seeing the offensive linemen all moving back to their normal positions and what we were throwing out there in the first grouping was also a really big positive sign to see. So it, like I said, that's why I'm optimistic. If this was the Steelers signing Aaron Rodgers with Mike Tomlin and choosing to run the same thing back again, I would have far more of an issue with heading into the offseason. I like drafting Drew Aller. His arm strength is fantastic. The problem I've always had was he could never win the big games in college. And everything I'm hearing is Mike McCarthy is making it his pet project. He's uninstalling everything that he was taught at Penn State and teaching him a whole new system. So, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how the Steelers juggle their quarterback room heading into the year, because we still really like Will Howard. He and Mason have been getting the QB2 reps during OTAs. So it's going to be fascinating to see if the Steelers try to roster 4 quarterbacks, if they try to trade Mason, if they see enough from Will during the preseason. But that's something that's going to be a very fascinating thing to look at. But we're speaking of the NFL draft. We're talking about that. And I actually had the exciting experience this year of getting to go to Pittsburgh and attend the NFL draft in person, and to see that whole thing play out in front of me was really exciting.
I actually wanted to ask you, as we're starting to get closer to our break here and it's starting to wind down, do you have give me like top five, not necessarily moments, but picks or things that you saw get the coolest reaction while you were there?
Well, it was, I think the coolest reaction definitely was every time one of our division rivals went on the clock and all the Steeler fans started booing and stuff.
So would you put that at one, or is that five?
I'd maybe two or three. Okay. I would say the most surprising kind of pick reaction-wise was Jeremiah Love going number three. I think into the draft, you know, he could have gone anywhere between three and seven. And so he was kind of that one player, being an offensive player, that everybody was kind of like, where is this guy going to go? Is somebody going to trade up to get this guy? And I think Arizona made a mistake taking him. I think he's a great running back, but that's a team that lacks so much identity. No quarterback, no
They've got a veteran quarterback. They've got a guy. They're putting in with Brissett.
And yeah, so, but he's not even there for OTAs because he wants to get paid as a number one now.
Right.
I mean, they're trusting a guy who, and he's not even showing up to their building.
Yeah. Look so bad now.
Yeah, it's going to be a miserable season for Cardinal fans, and I think adding the highest, actually, because of the rookie contracts and everything, he is now the highest paid running back in NFL history where he was drafted.
Wow.
Yeah. As a rookie, never taken a snap in the league, and he's making more than any other running back in the NFL is. So that reaction was interesting. Sorry to go on. You guys will understand after time. I get on odd tangents.
I think we timed it out to where you could have a little bit of time to talk about each moment when you're talking. I think, but you got two more moments to give us.
There you go. One of the coolest things though that was like not directly tied to the NFL draft though was there was a card show in Pittsburgh, and I got to meet my favorite YouTube card influencer, Kyle King of Cards. So that was a really cool moment for me. I got to be featured in his YouTube video and a vlog from the Pittsburgh draft card show weekend that he did. It was actually also posted on Topps's YouTube channel. So that was a really cool moment for me personally that just kind of happened. But just seeing the way the city of Pittsburgh, you know, put up with the amount of people that were there and the way it was laid out throughout the city. It wasn't, you know, in one just area where there's, you know, hundreds of thousands of people gathering. You know, they spread things out through different fan pavilions and stuff. The city of Pittsburgh made buses and the little train tram things free. So public transit was very easy to access, so people weren't forced to, you know, drive down there and pay, you know, $100-$150 to park, because that was the big thing, is everybody downtown was trying to upcharge on the parking. The parking was the premium, but the event was free, you know, going in was free, everything was free, easy and accessible. So it's a really great event to go to. The other thing is I saw fans from every team there. You know, it's, you know, very well represented. Fan bases are all out there showing their love. The most underrepresented fan base, I will say that I only saw like one or two 49er fans.
Lazy.
Yeah, yeah. So the 49ers were the one team that I was like, I remember not seeing very many 49er fans, but literally fans from every team. You know, very fun joshing, respectful stuff happening. Nobody got like over the top. There wasn't like any fights or anything.
Well, that's good.
It was a really good time. Over the 3 days, the city of Pittsburgh broke records every single day for highest attendance at an NFL draft, and the total number was over 800,000 people over the 3 days of the NFL draft. So, I mean, it was a lot. And somebody that like deals with anxiety and that kind of thing, like, I almost didn't go because I was like, oh my gosh, there's going to be so many people. I'm not going to be able to handle this. I'm going to freak out. Like, what am I going to do? So for me getting to that point to go took a lot, and then having as much fun as I did, I'm so glad I went. It's an experience that I will remember for the rest of my life.
While we still have time, what was the reaction in the building when Ty Simpson was drafted?
Very blah. I mean,
I'm sure there wasn't a whole hell of a lot of Rams fans there.
I think the reactions, you'd get a better judge if you're a little bit closer. There's so many people, and the stage was so far up, and we were so far back. And because they're, you know, doing shows, recordings for so many different networks and stuff in the back, there's not, like, multiple sets of speakers throughout. So, you know, if you're not kind of up by the TV, you can't really hear. You just kind of hear the muffle reaction through the back half of the crowd. So it was kind of hard to pick up on, like, specific reactions and stuff. They had the stadium open, and knowing what I know now, the one thing I would have done differently was, you know, not gone and bothered, you know, dealing with the 100,000 people in the pit. I would have just gone in the stadium and watched the draft on the big screen in the stadium.
That almost seemed like what I thought you were going to do, to be honest. Yeah. I was surprised that you guys were so far back. Mm-hmm. And
well, it was
like
really
that.
Cool because they had the stadium open, and they had Topps had a booth on the, like, a giant pavilion on the field. So they took up, like, half the field. The other half the field, they had, like, the kicking thing, the 40-yard dash, kids camp. Actually, as I was on the field, I got to be in the end zone and stuff. But as I was on the sideline, there was pit players coming out of the tunnel from the University of Pennsylvania. So I got to snag a photo with them right before they went off and started doing a kids camp. So they were actually on the field with the kids. Teaching them techniques and stuff. So that was kind of cool and unexpected that, you know, it was there, it was happening, and pit players were like, yeah, we're going to go teach the kids.
Interesting.
Yeah. But, like, being on the field and, like, getting to stand in the Steelers end zone, I freaked out. It was an all-time high fan moment for me. Like, it was like, oh my gosh, I have arrived. I am in my team's end zone where all their glorious touchdowns are scored. Like,
good old Heinz Field.
Good old Heinz Field. Like, I have arrived kind of a moment.
The Bane blew this up.
He did. He did indeed blow this up. And speaking of blowing things up, we don't want to get blown off the air, which means we got to pay our bills. So we're going to do just that. We'll be back for two more fabulous segments on Talking Sports here on KXRW 99.9 FM Vancouver.
Where it began, I can't begin to know it, but then I know.
For over 20 years, Vancouver Family Magazine has been covering local news, recreation, travel, education, parenting, personalities, and more. We connect your family to people, places, ideas, organizations, helpful resources, and local stories. Pick up your copy every month at over 300 locations all around Clark County, or read online at vancouverfamilymagazine.com. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and X for even more local news and family fun at Vancouver Family.
The Columbian and Southwest Washington continues to offer the most comprehensive and consistent coverage of our region and our people, despite the challenges faced by local newspapers nationwide. Valued donations to our community-funded journalism project via the Local Media Foundation pays for local reporters to provide expanded and in-depth coverage of key local issues in print and online, including homelessness, transportation, and the environment. For the most thorough daily coverage, visit Columbian.com. Please consider donating or subscribing today.
Support for KXRW comes from Kindred Vancouver in downtown Vancouver, Washington. Kindred is a community-focused general store offering bulk refillery options and supplies for sustainable, do-it-yourself living. With a focus on reducing waste and supporting clean, mindful lifestyles, Kindred helps individuals incorporate low-impact choices into daily life. More information is at KindredVancouver.com.
KXRW programming is made possible by partners like Buckley & Associates, attorneys at law, helping injured victims seek the justice they deserve for over 40 years, licensed in Washington State. Our diverse team speaks over 7 languages, making your rights more accessible and easier to understand. Learn more at BuckleyLaw.net. Again, that's BuckleyLaw.net. Buckley & Associates. We speak your language.
Welcome back to Talking Sports in the Groove for our second segment. This is your host, Ryan Black, with my co-host, Rip Rex. Rip, we're going to talk about something that I have a lot of passion about, something that I have a lot of love for, and that is the Portland Trail Blazers.
Oh, man. I know you've been waiting for this one.
My fandom runs deep and has a lot of layers to it with Blazers. I've had the chance to meet a lot of the Blazers from the early 2000s teams. Had some really cool run-ins, including one with Mr. Greg Oden. I actually got to sing to Greg Oden.
Oh, yeah,
sung
right.
Greg Oden
that's
a song. And then Greg Oden remembered who I was after I met him again because of the song. Like, so that was a really cool moment. So I've been a Blazer fan for years. When I was growing up, I got to go courtside and sit in on a pregame radio recording. My mom was doing a promotional night with her frame shop, so I was watching shoot around. I was talking to one of the ushers, and they let me go sit courtside. I got to meet Mike Rice and Mike Barrett, and I got to eat Christmas cookies that Mike Rice's wife made while listening to the pregame show.
Very cool.
Really cool moment that I'll never forget. So I've been a Blazers fan since I moved here. I love this team, and we are heading in to the most pivotal offseason in Blazers franchise history.
Well, being being such a passionate Blazers fan, and knowing so many Blazers fans being here in Vancouver and just being a short drive to Portland, and a lot of people here are Blazers fans, they are not very happy with this new owner. Are you one of those people?
Without knowing his history owning other teams, I could understand why people would be pessimistic about what is happening right now with Tom Dundon. But seeing how he came in and stabilized in a franchise in the NHL that was so close so many times from moving in the Carolina Hurricanes makes me feel a lot more optimistic, because I think what he's doing is, sure, he's cutting costs, and maybe some of the costs he's cutting he doesn't need to, but he's trying to get things to run smooth and even keel after, you know, the craziness that Jody Allen put the Blazers fans through. Because let's be honest, this team should have been sold several years ago, should have been sold to Phil Knight of Nike, and we shouldn't be having this conversation right now about Tom Dundon. 2 years ago, there was a very, very fair offer on the table. Phil Knight really wanted to buy the Blazers.
Wow.
And Jody Allen had to sell this team. It was part of the will. You have to sell the team. The proceeds go to charity. You know, that was part of Paul Allen's will. And part of that is keeping, you know, selling to a person that is motivated to keep the team here. Jody always said throughout the whole course of the sale, we're making sure that we're not going to get somebody in here that doesn't want to be in Portland. So I believe when Tom Dundon says my whole goal is to keep this team here in Portland, I think the deal will get done with the city. That might take a little bit longer than people want it to, but you know, the initial funding has been approved by the governor. So we're a step closer than we were before. Their goal is to get this project and the renovations done before 2030. That is the year the Rose Garden or the Rose Quarter will be hosting the Women's Final Four. So we're already showing that we can pull bigger events in. Getting this renovation done will secure the lease for the Blazers for 20 more years, and I think that will happen.
And, you know, if it was a stadium or an arena that didn't desperately need the renovations and the changes that it did, or even just for a whole new building, I would be on the other end of, you know, get this team winning and you know, pushing for a championship before talking about a new stadium. But this is a place I've been to multiple times now within the year, And it is the concession stands need some help.
Didn't you say you had an issue with the last SmackDown event you went to?
I mean, yes, there was a there's like an area. It's like a little you scan your phone or your card, and like the door opens up, and it's like a little bodega slash like mini mart thing. You can grab drinks or snacks or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
You scan them, charges your card, and then it lets you out. Of course, it's got these little doors and stuff like that, so people don't just rush in and steal stuff. I would sit there and scan my card, and it wouldn't open the door. It would scan my card, but the door wouldn't open.
Interesting.
I couldn't get in and actually get any food or snacks.
So there's obviously, you know, it's an older arena. Their upgrades are desperately needed. And so, you know, as long as the stadium funding gets addressed this offseason, I think we're at a good place. I think that can even get, you know, taken care of, I'd say hopefully by December 1st of the year, so we can kind of just sign this lease, wrap that up, and not have to think about that, because there's so many other things that we can focus on this offseason. We need to find a head coach. Now that we made the playoffs, we don't owe Chicago a pick anymore. They get our first-round pick this year. So that opens up our ability to trade multiple first round picks again, which puts us in the Wemby sweepstakes puts us in the Wemby sweepstakes and puts us in the the Giannis sweepstakes, not the
it's all good. You meant yeah. It's too many of these foreigners.
Yeah.
Oh, that sounds awful. But too many of these foreign basketball players with these wild names.
Yeah.
I think that It's hard not to mix them up. So
yeah, so it puts us in the Giannis sweepstakes, puts us in the Jaylen Brown sweepstakes. There's a big move to be had for the Blazers this offseason. This was a team that was not supposed to make the postseason, so getting there puts us ahead of the timeline. Dame's coming back. Denny and Dame are signed for very reasonable contracts for the next couple of seasons. We have money to make a move. You'd like to see, you know, a couple of these older guys, you know, transition out to another stop. So I'm excited for this offseason, because for the first time in 3 or 4 years, because of the Chicago getting their pick back from a 2021 trade, we finally have flexibility to make that big move that this team has been needing to make the last 3 or 4 years.
Well, I think the big question is who's going to be making the basketball decisions.
Yeah.
Because it's not, because you obviously you've got a non-basketball guy in your owner. So it's going to really rely on your GM, and it's going to rely on your head coach.
Well, and if you look at,
the big thing is finding your head coach.
If you look at what Joe Cronin has done from a trade perspective recently, it's hard to not have faith in what he has done. Getting Tamani Kamara out of the Damian Lillard trade and seeing how he's progressed. Going and getting Denny Advia and seeing how they've grown him. So he's already gone out, traded for players that weren't superstar caliber and made them into superstar caliber on this team. And so that's what I'm excited for, is because Joe does seem to have a basketball sense in a direction this team is heading in. And you've also, you know, have to possibly look at moving on from one of your two young guards this offseason in Scoot or Shaden, which would just, again, open up more possibilities in a big trade market that we're headed for this offseason. I think there's going to be a lot of big moves, not just by Portland, but by a lot of teams this offseason. I think the Eastern Conference especially, is going to have to try to make some moves to try to establish better teams in the East, because the West right now is just running away as a far and away better conference. But before we can even focus on bringing people in, you've got to secure the future, and that future is your head coach. And we're in that really weird spot, because the league can't technically fire Chauncey Billups, or he can't technically leave until the criminal investigation is all taken care of. So Portland's going to be hiring a head coach when they already technically have a head coach, in air quotes. It's a really weird situation, but securing that head coach is definitely the first big step in this whole offseason that we're about to embark on. Like I said, I think it's the most pivotal offseason in Blazers history.
Well,
because they made the playoffs, it puts us in a more win now spot than we should be.
Well, the big question with those trade moves and even the free agent appeal just in general between for any player to come here is going to be who you guys end up bringing in, but with how long it takes to get a coach and how behind the ball you guys are going to be because of how long it's going to take to get a head coach, because you're obviously not going to have one signed right away once you're able to have one on. Is that going to make it harder for this big trade year?
I would say maybe the only thing that I wouldn't say coach wise, because I think the general you kind of know and you can plan for what you're going to do based off who you're, you know, looking at interview wise coaching. I think it would be a different story if we had a first round pick this year, let's say we had a top 10 pick. Then I would want to get a head coach in before the NBA draft. But we don't have any picks in the draft this year, so it's not as pivotal that we have a head coach by the end of June. We could have him in the first week and a half in July and be ready for that spending spree.
You want to have that guy and have him in place in time to really pitch to some of these free agents or some of these guys looking to be traded out of their teams. I mean, that's going to be a big part. There's going to be certain coaches that some of these guys don't want to play for, and there's going to be certain coaches that the guys do want to play for.
No, I agree. I just think it's, from an overall perspective, I think it's a bigger deal to get that taken care of if you have a higher spot or if you have any draft capital this year to invest.
So with that market, do you have a top five or top three coaches that you'd like to see maybe manning the bench?
I would like to see Tiago Splitter back as the head coach of the Portland Trail Blazers.
That's your number one?
That's my number one.
Okay.
My number one. He did everything you need to do. He, in my opinion, he should have won Coach of the Year this year. No head coach was put in a harder position than Tiago Splitter was this year.
Interesting.
A team that was not supposed to make the playoffs at the beginning of the season at all. Two or three games into the year, he becomes the interim head coach. Chauncey Billups gets arrested, and the Blazers have to deal with all of that. They come together as a team in the second half of the season, start playing amazing team basketball, and we finally start to see this defensive identity that we have been waiting for in Portland for the past 10 years, it feels like. Every year we were promised this is going to be a great defensive team of players, and we finally got that this year. So, for me, the progression under Tiago just makes too much sense to not bring him back and see if it can continue. There's other candidates that I would be okay with. The top of my list would probably be the number one assistant in the NBA, Mike Anori, for the Timberwolves, or Jerry Stackhouse. I've heard guys like Jeff Van Gundy get mentioned around as well. He hasn't been a head coach in such a long time,
but
that I would rather just keep with what worked so well last year and bring Tiago back.
But there are some examples of teams right there on that brink that instead of either sticking with a coach that they had or moving on to somebody younger, went with a guy that hadn't been coaching for a little while, and like the Knicks with Mike Brown. So, of course, people are going to bring up Van Gundy, and it might be a good option, especially if you are looking at your stars being a little bit more of the older type guys.
Yeah. Yeah, I know Jerry Stackhouse and Mike Williams have also been interviewed. Tyler Lashbrook, the assistant for the Celtics, have also been interviewed. I don't know enough about Mike Williams or Lashbrook to really give a honest opinion on how I would feel they would do as a head coach. But I look at the list and I'm like, there's okay names, but with what we did and how good of a year we had, I would much rather just bring back Tiago and give him the opportunity and run with it and see if he can build on what he did last year.
How does he mess with Dame?
I don't know. I mean, Dame's been around the team all year, so you know, I would assume they probably have a good relationship. Yeah.
You got to hope at least, because I think that's a big key, especially him coming back from injury. He hadn't played all last year. This team just made the playoffs together with this chemistry. Mm-hmm. And now they're going to have this new guy, or not new guy, but a vet who the city loves, who kind of owns the city.
Well, and Dave's going to come back hungry, guys.
Exactly. I mean, but you don't want to change. But the last thing those guys that won are going to want to do is change anything that they did. And he's going to come in and something is going to change.
I disagree with that. Because
there's a chemistry when the ball starts coming through somebody else.
Well, but they won to an extent. They won. They got to the playoffs and then they lost in the first round. So there's a lot to change. This is a team that also is. It's not like there's an unknown change where, oh, Dame, we just traded for Dame back this offseason. No, Dame's been here all year, so he's been able to be part of the team and be able to grow with the group of players. He hasn't been on the court with them,
right?
But they know Dame's coming back. There's no unknown in that. That's why the guard play this year was so important to watch, because we have a lot of guards. Everybody out there is fighting for a spot. Mm-hmm. You know, Scoot and Shaden are fighting to be the next guy. And then you've got Dame and Drew as well. So they're four deep at guard right now.
Yeah. It's always when you have a new guy bringing the ball up, something always changes, and you don't know if it's going to be positive or negative. So that was just something I wanted to bring up.
Well, but Dame's done it in a positive setting for this team time and time again. I don't think him coming back changes any of that. Okay. I think he comes back and he solidifies things and he stabilizes this team more than he throws a wrench into this team, because it comes in, it takes pressure off players, and it will allow things to open up. And if you look at how things opened up, I mean, the perfect example this year is Denny. I mean, the way the game opened up for Denny this year, you take pressure off and have a guy like Dame in there producing with Denny and Tamani, that's scary. That becomes a scary three. And then you're not even talking about Shaden or Scoot in that process. I mean,
you're ending up keeping one of them.
Right, you're ending up keeping one of them, and if you make a big move, you might have to lose one plus to Monty. I'm saying with the way the roster is constructed right now, there's a clear pathway to getting back to the postseason and being a postseason contender heading into next offseason. It's time to head to our final commercial break, pay those bills, take care of the dues here at the station, so we can keep talking sports from the Couve here on KXRW 99.9 FM, Vancouver.
For over 20 years, Vancouver Family Magazine has been covering local news, recreation, travel, education, parenting, personalities, and more. We connect your family to people, places, ideas, organizations, helpful resources, and local stories. Pick up your copy every month at over 300 locations all around Clark County, or read online at VancouverFamilyMagazine.com. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and X for even more local news and family fun at Vancouver Family.
The Columbian in Southwest Washington continues to offer the most comprehensive and consistent coverage of our region and our people, despite the challenges faced by local newspapers nationwide. Valued donations to our community-funded journalism project via the Local Media Foundation pays for local reporters to provide expanded and in-depth coverage of key local issues in print and online, including homelessness, transportation, and the environment. For the most thorough daily coverage, visit Columbian.com. Please consider donating or subscribing today.
Support for KXRW comes from Kindred Vancouver in downtown Vancouver, Washington. Kindred is a community-focused general store offering bulk refillery options and supplies for sustainable, do-it-yourself living. With a focus on reducing waste and supporting clean, mindful lifestyles, Kindred helps individuals incorporate low-impact choices into daily life. More information is at kindredvancouver.com.
KXRW programming is made possible by partners like Buckley & Associates, attorneys at law, helping injured victims seek the justice they deserve for over 40 years. Licensed in Washington State, our diverse team speaks over 7 languages, making your rights more accessible and easier to understand. Learn more at BuckleyLaw.net. Again, that's buckleylaw.net. Buckley & Associates. We speak your language.
Welcome back to the final segment on my first show here as your host of Talking Sports in the Couve with my co-host Rip Rex. Rip, we just had a great conversation about the Portland Trail Blazers and what a pivotal offseason it will be. But we have more basketball talk to talk about because we have the NBA Finals starting on Wednesday. We had an epic Game 7 happen last night. Well, what was supposed to be an epic Game 7 turned into just kind of a mundane Game 7 happened last night in the NBA. And we know that the New York Knicks will now be taking on the San Antonio Spurs in the NBA Finals. And you as a Knicks fan have to be absolutely elated.
Absolutely. This is to say I'm excited is an understatement. I was telling some people that the last time, Jono's going to laugh at this, but the last time the Knicks have been in the championship, it was 99 to 2000. So it's nice to have something to actually party for, because the fans over in New York literally partied in the streets after every single win.
Before we talk too much about the finals, I want to talk about Game 7 of the Western Conference Finals real quick, because man alive, was that a fun game to watch, because the entire San Antonio Spurs team showed up. Everybody on that team played their role to perfection. In OKC, only one of their guys really showed up. Shea was the only guy that really showed up in that Game 7, and it showed. They did manage to keep it close, but there were several times in that game where San Antonio could have and probably should have blown the top off of things. And to see the reaction from Wemby after the game, and to see that true winner's mentality come out, to see that, you know, it kind of gave me reminiscent thoughts of, like, young Mamba Kobe vibes, watching him play. You know, one of the things Wemby did this offseason was specifically had many conversations with Kobe's agent about, you know, what it meant for him to win, what he put into the art of winning, how he grew that mentality to be that winner. And so seeing him kind of come to fruition in front of our eyes last night was a really cool thing to see. And I'm excited to see this Spurs team play and grow together, because they're so young and they are so dominant when they play as a team like they did last night.
And that sounds very familiar to another team that they're actually going to be having to play. So that's what's going to make this series so interesting. And not to be a Knicks homer, but I'm going to be a Knicks homer for a second and say that this is a very complete team that plays at that same type of high energy level that you were just talking about, that I think can match a lot of those things that they bring to the table. So I think that this game is going to, if we don't win it, it's going to go a deep series, and it's going to be a lot of fun to watch, and it's going to be high energy, and you're going to see Wembanyama on the highest stage perform, and you're going to see Jalen Brunson on the highest stage perform, and hopefully we see Kat on the highest stage perform. We'll see if he shows up. It's not always the case, but I love this team to death, and I love what they can do. And I'm thankful that we're playing the Spurs instead of the Thunder.
Yeah. Well, I mean, a big reason you're not playing the Thunder is because Chet Holmgren went and just vanished off the face of the planet.
From my understanding, they're still looking for him.
Yeah, like this man absolutely, he only took 4 shots last night. Wow. Only 4 shots in a Game 7.
And this was and this was at one point when he was a rookie, this was like a game-changing player, right?
Right.
This was like a generational player.
Well, this is somebody that has a contract that kicks in next year that will be getting paid almost $45 to $50 million over the next 5 years.
Wow.
I mean, and he absolutely disappeared, not just in Game 7, but really the whole series. And you can make an argument that he didn't really have a good postseason in general.
He was supposed to be, he's supposed to be Shea's sidekick.
He is supposed to be Shea's sidekick, and now OKC fans have to be sitting there thinking, What do we have to go reshuffle now?
Yeah, put a for sale sign up.
Yeah,
on, you know?
Yeah, because it, we just lost to the worst version that this Spurs team is going to be because of how young they are and the experience they're getting being in the finals. Nope, like this is like 2 or 3 years ahead of schedule. And now it is scary because we are seeing and witnessing the birth of what could be the next superpower in sports in front of our eyes. I mean, this is gives me very New England Patriots-esque type of dynasty building potential because their core is so young in San Antonio. Their big three are all under 23 years old.
Well, the big thing about that, though, is there's a big difference in the way teams move around and how frequently they move around between the NFL and the NBA.
Definitely.
Keeping a team together is far harder in the NBA.
I agree with that.
And especially with how expensive those players are and how much guys move around. Even the Knicks have examples of that where, like, Bridges was being talked about being traded all the time.
Yeah.
OG Anunoby, all those guys. So, you know, as long as they can survive, I agree that this is going to be a very strong West team, and it's very refreshing to see. That's for sure.
Yeah, it is. Well, and I mean, with the new anti-tanking rules that were just approved, it's going to make it a lot harder to build that young core that the Spurs have built. I mean, with Castle, Dillon, and Wemby, it is a scary, scary thing, and that's without even talking about De'Aaron Fox.
With that being said, and I'll give you the second go here, but we're both gonna go. Kind of give our quick little before the series starts predictions of what we think is going to happen. And I'll go first just to kind of give you an example, but also because I know that you're going to close this thing out with something a little bit long. So, and you already know the answer for me. So, I think a big thing here is the Knicks have a great chance of winning, and I think they're going to win in six. And I think this is why. I think that if you are able to put Wemby in and control him, he's gonna score a certain amount, he's gonna get a certain amount of rebounds, but if you keep him from going off, the rest of the team will now have to rely on scoring against a team that plays very good defense. And I think that both Cat, who's an all-star player and is a generational player and is a great player at times, and with the help of Mitch Robinson.
Well, is he going to play? Because I heard he was not going to play.
Right now, he's listed day-to-day.
Is he? Okay.
So we'll see what happens there.
Okay.
But I think we possess the ability to control Wemby and be able to make them have to score on guys like Josh Hart.
Mm-hmm.
And with the age as well, something about this team gives me the Allen Iverson Sixers vibes when Iverson went to the finals. So we'll see what happens. I think the Knicks, though, win in six. I think it goes all the way to the six games.
That was not a very good 76ers team that went to the finals that year, though.
I mean, know what I mean?
That was the Allen Iverson show and nobody else really on that roster other than Snow.
Yeah.
Than Eric Snow.
For some reason, it's just giving me that feeling. I don't know why. There was a lot. That everybody had that same... this guy's unbeatable. This guy's unstoppable. This guy is going to this is off of even some of the experts and stuff like that. They think that they're going to kind of go run through the Knicks here.
Yeah.
And I don't think that that's going to happen.
Well, I mean, and this is where I think nobody's, you know, let's look at context here. The Knicks won every matchup against the Spurs during the regular season, including the NBA Cup. Everybody's forgetting this is an NBA Cup rematch
which we beat
in
them
the finals.
In. Yes.
Yeah. So it's not like the Knicks haven't had a chance, haven't got the better of the Spurs, but this is a postseason. This is a seven-game series, and I don't know if the Villanova 3 are going to be able to get it done against the young Spurs core. I have the Spurs in six. If Robinson doesn't play, I have the Spurs in five.
Really?
Yes.
You think that they have the scoring to match the outside of just Wemby? Be able to match this defensive team?
Yes, I do.
Interesting.
I mean, Champagne just dropped 20 last night. Everybody is getting hot at the right time for this Spurs team. I think the youth. I think them coming together. I think they're excited to play together. I think they know that the moment has arisen, and I think they could take the biggest step ever by beating the Knicks this offseason and truly cementing themselves as the start of the next superpower. And I'm not a huge – I mean, you know me. I'm not the biggest superpower guy, the whole, you know, taking over things. But seeing them construct this from purely drafting guys, building that young core, and just watching the greatness of Victor Wembanyama before our eyes and watching what we could be seeing as the greatest basketball player ever. I'm not sitting here ready to have that conversation yet, but seeing how he's grown year over year and seeing that he is in year three and already getting his team to the finals and already being that big of a presence makes me believe that we could be seeing the next great one.
The next great one, really.
Yeah, really. 100%. All said and done, he could be the greatest player of all time. With his size, as long as his athleticism continues to improve, there's no reason he can't be the greatest basketball player.
I mean, it does definitely help being well over 7 feet tall.
Yeah, 100%.
What is he, 7'4"?
Yeah.
7'4"?
And it would be a different kind of great player. It's not like you can throw him in. You know, it's why I have a hard time with the, you know, the GOAT debate, because you can, in my opinion, you can have GOATs at every single position. Because especially with how the league used to be compared to how the league is now, you know, it's so hard to answer that question. But when I watch Victor play, I sit there and I say to myself, yes, I am watching what could be the greatest player of all time.
Well, he's going to have a big first time in the finals, having to not only get wins in Madison Square Garden, but play against something I keep bringing it up, but like a ruthless defensive team, a team mm-hmm. that gets in your ear,
yeah,
a team that talks smack, a team that plays well together,
mm-hmm.
that isn't necessarily the I'm not taking anything away from the teams the Spurs played on the way here, especially not the Thunder. But I think the type of toughness the Thunder play with compared to the type of toughness the Knicks play with are two day and night different things. You're not going to get, you know, our backcourt looking for calls more than looking for shots. We're going to mm-hmm. be putting up a lot of shots.
Mm-hmm.
And then the guys behind us, you know, Alvarado is going to be dishing the ball around two guys because we move a lot of our starters around in different positions and things like that. So we open them up to a lot of different opportunities to score. You'll even see at some point Josh Hart playing power forward just because of the way he plays defense. I don't necessarily always enjoy it when he's down there. I'm a fan right. of the tall power forwards and the tall centers. But it's more of a chemistry thing than necessarily a position thing for Mike Brown and the Knicks. And that's something that the Spurs are going to have to factor for, and the Spurs are going to have to be able to match in a different way. A big thing you were taking away from the Western Conference Finals was a lot of that referee battle stuff mm-hmm. and a lot of that talk about the referees and the calls going certain ways. I don't think you're going to have that same debate in this situation.
I hope not, man. I can't stand the NBA and the officiating and the lack of, you know, transparency between, you know, what is a foul and what isn't a foul.
Yes. Yes. There are so many times where there are situations where a guy's feet are planted and his hands mm-hmm. are in the air, a guy jumps in the air and then kind of like midair chooses to land on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And suddenly that's a foul.
Yeah. It's part of the reason I have such a hard time watching Shea. It's because I don't like the flopping.
Well, Caruso was doing the same thing.
Yeah.
And it was driving me crazy
mm-hmm.
watching the game last night.
Yeah.
I think even if it does come down to calls, I think it's going to be hard to get a call in the Garden. And that's going to be another thing that comes in. But I really don't think that the Spurs are going to, at least not right away, be able to handle that kind of pressure that the Knicks put on them right away.
I think
it's a big reason why we've been able to sweep teams is yeah. because of how hot we come out from first quarter.
And that's why I think it's very important that the Spurs have home court advantage in this series. I think if the series was starting out in New York, I might view the series slightly differently, because coming out the first two games, having to play in front of that hostile New York crowd, would be different. But he gets two games. They get two games at home to get their feet under them and kind of get more prepared for that. And they'll also get to see what, you know, both teams will get to see what defenses are getting thrown at them.
Yeah.
What matchups are happening. Because that's the other part of this is it's such an, when you sit there and break it down by position, it's such an intriguing series just based off of pure matchups alone. For me, it was, in my opinion, the best finals that we could have got heading into both conference finals before they started. And I'm glad that's the finals we're getting. And I think, and I'm hopeful that it's going to be a really good series.
I do too.
I want it to be good competitive. I mean, I'm rooting for the Spurs. Yes, but you know, it's not that I'm sitting here saying I want the Knicks to lose. I hate the New York Knicks.
Right, right.
I want a good NBA final series.
Right.
And if we get a good 6-7 game series, I will be thrilled.
Yeah, I like New York's chances of getting one of these two games in San Antonio and making this go a long time.
Yeah.
I think it would. I would have been a lot more worried if we had to win one of two games in Oklahoma. Not to take anything away from the San Antonio fans, by any means. The fans are gonna come in droves. I'm kind of nervous that all the fans are gonna be in all black and it's just gonna be a blackout or something. It's gonna be a little intimidating.
Yeah.
But
the teal out they did against the Blazers?
Did they do a teal out? That's cool.
It was kind of like a teal out color wave type.
That's cool.
Yeah.
I don't look at going into San Antonio as like a winless situation or a place that we can't win in. So I like our chances going there. Whether we can sustain that is a whole different question.
So it sounds like you feel better about the Knicks playing the Spurs than you would have the Knicks playing the Thunder.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. Okay. And that's not even necessarily a basketball thing. It's a having to play against Shea, mm-hmm. having to play against the refs, having to spend so many games talking about calls that did or didn't happen, and then playing in Oklahoma is hard.
Yeah,
the place rattles, and they've got a great fan base. And as much as I hate to say it, because they took the Sonics from us, that fan base comes out for the team, especially when they're in the championship.
Yes, it most definitely does. And we will be covering the finals as they go and continue. They kick off Wednesday, and we have to get kicked on out of here. This is Ryan Black and Rip Rex signing off from Talking Sports in the Couve on KXRW 99.9 FM Vancouver.